This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brock Ward, you are. And Brock, you are.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Yeah, Shannon Dreher coming up in 30 minutes from Peoria. I want to spend some significant time with her, kind of going through where the Mariners are at, why they're hitting the way they are, and what this looks like heading into the season. So stick around for Shannon for some good Mariner conversation. I popped outside to grab some food, and who did I run into but G. Scott, who said, oh, Brock's not in? I'll come stop by. And so I say, yeah, come on in. So G's here.
Come on, man. I'm fresh off... fresh off our holiday. Shout out to all my Irish brothers and sisters out there. St. Patty's was yesterday. And
how was
it? Man, you know
your
what?
Your first St. Patrick's Day as an Irish person.
It was fantastic. First of all, it was
for
beautiful.
For those who don't know, let me just explain. For those who missed it a couple weeks ago, G did a 23andMe and found out that he is 21% Irish.
Mm-hmm.
And then last week, upped that to 24% just on general principle.
Yeah, so. I'm back down to 21. Okay. So... my wife and I, we walked Chambers, shout out to Chambers Bay down there. That was beautiful. We went out and you did that, got a little coffee, you know, doing that thing. And then yesterday, I thought it was interesting. I don't know if you guys are Netflix lovers out there, but right now, number one is Irish Wish.
Mm.
Yeah, Irish Wish. And I'm like, Lindsay Lohan. By the way, I've always wondered, that Lindsay Lohan, good looking lady right there. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so I watched Irish Wish.
What have you wondered?
Irish Wish, huh?
What have you wondered?
I mean, there's a connection.
Oh, between you and Lindsay
Lohan.
Like if you could like, okay, got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyways, watch Irish Wish. Aisha Curry is in there.
I've always wondered about Lindsay Lohan and whether or not I had a shot with her. Is not something most people
will say. No, I didn't say it like that. I didn't say it like that.
Oh,
but
I'm sorry.
I know this is a sports show, so I want to make sure it's sports related.
Yeah.
Steph Curry's wife is in there, Aisha Curry.
Okay.
So I just want to pay off the sports
Thank
side
you.
Of things.
Appreciate that.
Anyways, but yeah, Irish Wish, I watched that. How was your weekend, man?
Well, it was fine.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about this the little love triangle in Pittsburgh and how you think all this went down. Maura and I were trying to do a little figuring out. We were trying to figure out the timing of all of this.
Okay.
So here's kind of what we know.
Yeah.
We know Kenny Pickett is upset.
Okay.
He says that he heard about the Russell Wilson signing on social media rather than from the Steeler organization.
Okay.
Now, did the Russell Wilson camp jump the gun on the Steeler? So we went and did some digging. Russ posted his video, his hype video.
Well, first Schefter...
Exactly.
Out the
yeah.
news.
1 minute
and
after,
he already had a Photoshop picture of Russ in a Steelers jersey, which is now Russ's profile picture, which makes me think that his team put that.
So
together.
Where did Schefter get the info? Was it from the Steeler organization? Unlikely, if they had yet to tell Kenny Pickett about it, or from Russ and Mark Rogers and that crew? It sure feels like that would be the most likely answer. So did Russ jump the gun on the organization by getting that news out there, therefore ticking off Kenny Pickett, necessitating a trade that maybe they didn't really want to make, and now all of a sudden the chickens come home to roost because instead of competing with Kenny Pickett, he's competing with Justin Fields, right, who my guess is a lot of fans in Pittsburgh are going to be anxious to see as soon as Russ screws up.
Yeah. I know this. You used to get on me when I first started in radio, and you was like, "Gee, you can't say that." But I'm going to say it anyway. I don't know about that, but I do know this. I do know that there was a certain time that Mark Rogers, in particular, because he's part of Russell Wilson's camp.
He's his agent.
Yeah, he's his agent. He had a He had a history of texting a lot of the sports media folks in his area when there's kind of a narrative that they wanted to push out there, or if there's any news that they wanted to get in front of, or most of the time behind of. So again,
or like the destinations that Russell Wilson might want to be traded to.
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean, I'm not requesting a trade, but if I was,
so again, I don't want anybody, because a lot of times I get.
We don't know.
We don't know.
Right.
You know, I get connected to saying some rough things. I want to just say this. Shout out to Russ. It feels like with his announcement of being connected with the Pittsburgh Steelers now, he didn't wear his own jersey. He actually showed love to the Pittsburgh Steelers. So Russ in Pittsburgh could be like me in a marriage. Third time's a charm. You know what I mean? So shout out to everybody that's been married three times. If you've been married three times, you know what I'm talking about. Finally.
Well, let me
finally
ask you.
Gonna do it right.
Did you learn a lot from the first two?
Yes.
Helping you with the third?
Absolutely.
And did you think Russ has learned enough from Seattle and Denver to help him in Pittsburgh?
I hope so. If Russell does anything, the first phone call Russell should make should be to my man Kurt Warner, the quarterback. I think he needs to talk to him on how he was towards the end of his career.
Oh, interesting.
Remember when he was with the Giants?
Right.
And he was there. He started, but Eli Manning came in. Mm-hmm. He's like, hey, man, it's your show. I'm going to be the guy. And then he went over to Arizona. It's like, it's no really big deal. Be the teacher. And I would like to see, because we all know Russell has been around a championship culture. Russell does understand the work ethic. And so for as many things that are being negatively said about Russell, I will say this. Nobody outworks that man. That's the truth. I've seen it firsthand. I've seen it with my own eyes. He will work. Two, nobody has a more positive attitude during a game. Go ahead, look at the Green Bay Packers right. NFC Championship game yep. when he never wavers. So there are some qualities of Russ that are absolutely fantastic.
100%.
It's just the other stuff that makes us all cringe.
It's a bit of a detraction from a lot of those real positives. Quickly, we just got a minute or so. Would you have rather the Seahawks do the Sam Howell deal or the Justin Fields deal?
I'd rather them do whatever they did. Because whatever they did is what they wanted to do.
I know, but what would you have done?
Me?
Yeah.
I would have gone Justin Fields because personally I have a, you know, I think Justin Fields is an amazing quarterback. I think Justin Fields was messed up by the Bears. I think Caleb Williams, good luck, buddy, because you are going to the Bears, and I don't think the Bears are a good organization. I personally would have gone Justin Fields, mm-hmm. but there's obviously, look, I told you on Friday.
Yeah, you were psyched.
Sam Howell's a bad boy.
Right.
He's good. Yeah. So whatever the case might be, I mean, the fact that Chicago got rid of Justin Fields for a bag of Funyuns and a Faygo, a grape Faygo, is crazy. They had a balloon release on 79th and College Grove in Chicago for Justin Fields.
I know that you're sort of using Funyuns in the negative here, but Funyuns are the most underrated chip.
Bro, do you know?
Dude, they're underrated.
Bro, Funyuns?
Funyuns are good.
Funyuns
are underrated.
You go with some of my aunties and them,
they want
some Funyuns.
That's
and
what
a,
they like.
Funyuns and a Pepsi.
See the Pepsi.
Funyuns in
me.
A Pepsi.
Pepsi.
You know what I'm saying?
Me.
In Chicago,
Funyuns are super underrated. So are Bugles.
They are.
Bugles and Funyuns, both underrated.
You're showing yourself, Salk. On the Bugles?
Really?
But them Funyuns, the Funyuns fire.
What do you mean I'm
Bugles?
Showing myself?
I mean,
I can't show myself. I don't even know what that means. All right, well, Gene, thank you.
There's a lot of things you don't know what I say.
That's
means.
For sure. Yeah, I just sort of nod along and hope I don't get in trouble later.
All right.
Thanks, buddy. There's G. Scott. His show gets going over at 9 o'clock with Ursula over on 97.3 Cairo News Radio. We'll come back with everything you need to know and then a whole bunch of Mariner talk with Shannon Dreher at 8:30, Brock and Salk. Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Seahawks are making their moves and continue to fill up that linebacker room after Bobby Wagner leaves, Jordan Brooks leaves. They bring in two new guys. So last week it was Tyrell Dodson. This week it's going to be Jerome Baker. Baker's been in Miami, gets, what, $7 million on a one-year deal. Both guys beloved by the PFF stats. Everything PFF grades out looks very good for these two guys. They're both young, 25, 27 years old. Both get short-term, prove-it-style deals. And as Brock mentioned earlier, both guys can really run. So I think there is a big nod here to trying to be better in coverage at the linebacker position, something they've struggled with. Will it come at the expense of the ability to stop the run? I don't know. We'll see. Although Brock said earlier that he thought the Seahawks would probably be looking for somebody to just be more of a run-stopping linebacker to work with these two guys as well.
We've been talking about the quarterback situation because in Pittsburgh it got a little more interesting. Steelers trade for Justin Fields over the weekend. Adam Schefter says the Bears' decision to trade him to Pittsburgh was part of the reason, like, they wanted him to go there?
The fact of the matter is, it was the soft trade market, as the compensation for him shows. And the Bears felt that they were doing right by Justin Fields to move him now, to get him to his new team now, despite the fact that the compensation turned out to be lower than some people thought it would be. It's a 2025 conditional sixth-round pick that could be a fourth if he plays in 51% of the plays this upcoming season. But the Bears were not worried about the compensation. They thought they were doing right by the young man.
You think he was at a soccer game? That's kind of what it sounds like.
Car wash?
It sounds to me like he was at a soccer
playing,
game.
At first, I thought they were playing crowd noise highlights right in the background, but I pulled it from their system, so I didn't get to see the video.
I think he was at
it.
A soccer game. I'm going with Adam Schefter from a soccer game doing that report. And I don't really understand. Does he really think that NFL teams are just trying to do right by guys they're trading?
That's the thing that I don't get.
What are you talking about? Like,
it's the business.
Win.
Well, there is a separate report that there were other teams on the list, and they did go with the one that Justin Fields wanted.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Maybe, but if doing right by him is you get to compete with Russell Wilson, that is a very interesting take on Russell Wilson as well. And just again, to note, the Seahawks probably could have done this deal or bested it if they'd wanted to. Sure seems like they preferred Sam Howell to Justin Fields.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
We're going to go down to the desert in a few minutes, talk to Shannon Dreher, but the Mariners had themselves a really nice weekend. You know, arms, bats, you name it. The offense was all over, man. They got a lot of hits.
And the 1-2 pitch, swinging a line drive, left field line, a fair ball into other corner. Dylan, Ronnie, third, he'll score. Julio in at third base. Up of the ball is Garlick. The throw in cut off by Andrews. Jorge Polanco with a rocket base hit in left field. Drives in a run. And the Mariners have a 1-0 lead over the Diamondbacks. Here in the bottom of the first inning, you're going to see Jorge do that all season long.
Yeah, he's really been fun to watch so far. I think a lot of folks very excited about the beginning of the Jorge Polanco era. Now, we'll see. Again, injuries are a concern with him. And, you know, the fact that you're doing it in spring training does not necessarily mean you're going to be able to do it in the regular season. As I pointed out earlier, the last 2 years of Jorge Polanco look pretty similar. Not exactly the same, but very similar to the 2 years of Colton Wong before he showed up here in Seattle. But going the other way, a little bit more pop, some of the things he's capable of doing, it's been a really nice start for him. On the other side of things, the arms looked great. Castillo was nasty on Saturday. Yesterday, Logan Gilbert did what he needed to continue to get himself ready for the season. Scott Servais impressed with the tall righty.
I thought Logan Gilbert was really good today. Winning the game, trying to focus on using some of the new weapons he's got. He threw actually quite a few two-seamers today and a lot of cutters, which are new pitches for him, just to kind of see where they were at. And he had really good results. A few broken bats. They get 6-7 strikeouts today. Really good outing for him. He's right on pace to, you know, have one more before he gets going in the season.
Yeah, it's good. So it sounds like the broken bats were coming off the two-seamer, the strike swings and misses were coming off the cutter. So I think we're going to see a little bit of a different Logan Gilbert. It's interesting how much he's changed his repertoire since first coming up to the big leagues a couple of years ago and continuing to find ways to get better, to work through the issues he's had. Remember, the big question for him, and he said it himself, was how can he limit some of the hard contact that's come off of his fastball? Well, add a cutter, two-seamer, try to throw guys off that fastball a little bit, and so far seems to be doing what he's hoping it would.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Washington State loses in the Pac-12 tournament semifinals to Colorado, but they get a 7 seed in the NCAA tournament. They'll play Drake in Omaha on Thursday in a 7-10 matchup, Gonzaga 5-12 matchup with McNeese State Thursday in Salt Lake City. And then Gonzaga's women's team is going to be in the women's tournament, and they got a number 4 seed there. That's everything you need to know. And of course, we do a quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. We were kind of talking through Just to use this as a way of leading into Shannon, talking through the way the Mariners have hit so far this year and trying to go the other way a little bit more, trying to stay within themselves, a little bit less emphasis on the home run ball. And Brant Brown, their offensive coordinator, quote unquote, is a big part of that, working on strategy, not just on, you know, hitting fundamentals, right? And so Jerry DePoto, on with Wyman and Bob on Friday, spoke a little bit more about Brant Brown.
And that's where Brownie comes in. He's a big personality. He's got a lot of the same philosophies that we have, and he has a very different way of putting it. And we thought that, I don't know if we're going to take the Marine layer out of, you know, the Marine, but at the end of the day, we do, you know, we do want to change the way our offense works. And Brownie is stressing the importance of team offense, and I think that's a big thing for us.
I think that's fascinating. And again, Shannon Dreher is going to join us in a moment. She is really the person that was beating that drum at the end of last year. I remember she and I talking about it at T-Mobile, one of the last games of the year. And this was after Cal's comments and saying, hey, there's some frustration with the way that the team has operated strategically. It's not just about player acquisition and spending money and all of that. And they took it seriously in the offseason. Do I agree with their take on strikeouts? Not really. As I said, I think you can live with strikeouts as long as you get the walks and the home runs. But are there other ways to try to win, especially in April and May and even into June at T-Mobile? Yeah, I think there are. And I'm excited to see that the Mariners are starting to take that part of it seriously. So why is this team hitting as well as they are right now? We're going to ask Shannon that question and a whole bunch more. Coming up next, it's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710 and seattlesports.com.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio, weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
All right, we'll be holding the line here. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710seattlesports.com. We'll go to Pittsburgh, get back to some of the NFL talk that we've had. That's in an hour from now. But the Mariners had a really, really good weekend. I know they didn't win the game yesterday, but they were the better team. And certainly during the time that the game was being played by folks that are going to be in the majors this year, they did what they needed to do, won a couple of games on Saturday. After the rainout on Friday, Shannon Dreher, our Mariners insider, has been in the desert now for, I believe, 2.5 months, something like that. Shannon, good morning. How are you? How is Peoria?
Peoria has, we've had a little bit of it all. We've had rain, we've had wind, we've had sunshine. It has not disappointed.
How was your second round of house guests?
Pretty good. Bob locked himself out of his room. That was one issue.
Yeah.
And then I love it. They did that in the middle of the night and they text me and I did not get the text and I'm thinking all along, well, what am I going to do about it?
Right.
Other than that, I think it was good. They, cut down on the snacks a tiny bit, perhaps. They are very snack focused. It is all about what are we taking to the field with us as far as the snacks go. The Lunchables, every kind of dot pretzel you can imagine, mm-hmm. they had those.
Those are good.
Yes, very focused on those, but otherwise very lovely house guests.
Okay, clean?
Yeah, really? Yes.
Well, I know Bob is. I wasn't sure if everybody else was.
Lefko's pretty neat and tidy, too.
Yeah. All right. I love it. Let's talk some baseball. It's been kind of an offensive explosion here for the Mariners. And I don't know, it got me looking at their spring training stats, which I should never do. It's such a stupid idea. But I did it anyway yesterday, Shannon, because I was like, man, it sure seems like a lot of these guys have hit really well. And if my numbers are right, I think I looked at this right. Every single bat who's going to make this team, other than Ty France, Sebi Zavala, and Luke Raley, who's just not hit at all, has an OPS of 800+. And all but two of those guys are 900+. What's going on down there?
You know, it's funny because it's one of those things where it almost seems like they flipped a switch. And I wrote very briefly about it yesterday. You know how you get that first kind of chill in the air at the end of the summer that tells you, ooh, you know, either the postseason or football are coming up. I mean, it almost feels like something like that happened down here. And all of a sudden, yeah, the season is approaching quickly. And the offense all together. I mean, there's some guys that have been consistent throughout. And it's different. I mean, you can only do so much as a hitter preparing for a season. You can't go face major league pitching to get ready. Pitchers, your pitch is going to be your pitch no matter what field, what gym you throw it in, no matter, you know, wherever you are. So it's very different. But I think what that kind of indicates is they've had a really good progression, a really good buildup, and perhaps a little bit more indicative of the kind of bats that they have. And that's why that OPS has been there. What I like in that I've seen it is it became very apparent that they've been able to hit together as a group. And, you know, we talked about years and years ago, Scott Service called it the conga line when they just kind of pass the baton and you can, you know, put the good at-bats together. I think one of the things that you're seeing right now, and this is something that I'm trying to get more into, and I do think it is a shift in philosophy, but there was – I shouldn't give this away. I should write it. But they had – like working on that takes time. Easier to tell you. Don't tell anybody. You know, it's so much has been put in. Dominate the zone is what they are all about. There's no question about that. But you might remember something that they tracked that was called the PTPA, or the protective plate appearance.
Yeah.
And they had an award for that. And it got points. And, it just is, there were things that you could do that could help move the offense along that not necessarily are a hit and certainly aren't reflected in a batting average or sometimes even an on-base percentage. Like a walk will help, a long at bat to wear out the pitcher or something like that. No, they want to hit the ball, and they want to hit the ball hard right now. The PTPA, it's nowhere on the rake report. That was kind of when it first kind of was alerted to me that they're really maybe going in a different direction, starting to talk to people. And a lot of the times when you want to hit the ball hard and really connect, you're going earlier in the count. And I think that might have something to that. That's something that I'm going to keep an eye on as the season gets started that maybe is a little bit of a philosophical switch. I mean, you're going to have guys like J.P. Crawford who can really grind out in a bat, but I think you're also going to have some guys that aren't going to miss their pitches early on. And it's not that they were trying to walk, but it was that they were focusing on other things that they could do. And I asked Scott Service about it in a morning meeting about a week ago. We're done with that. You know, we want to hit the ball, you know, and I think that perhaps I don't know that that's what we're seeing right now, but maybe that is something that the focus has really kind of been taken away from the other things that you can do. It's let's just get this ball in play.
It's interesting you say that, because this has sort of been in the back of my mind for the last couple of years. And, you know, for a long time, really starting in, let's call it the mid 2000s, 2003, 4, 5, that era, it felt like, you know, if you wanted to win a baseball game, you needed to get the starting pitcher out of the game as early as possible, go to work, tee off on the bad bullpens, right? And that's when, you know, the walks and on base percentage really came up, with Moneyball had just been released a few years earlier. It felt like that was a strategy that was, you know, the way to win in baseball. But who the heck wants to get the starting pitcher out of the game early now? All you do is get like 12 relievers throwing 98 with nasty sliders, and they parade in one after another after another. So some of that, you got to work together to get the starter out. I don't know whether it's as valuable as it used to be.
No, I've been wondering that too. And so I think that this is just more of an aggressive approach. And it's also maybe kind of trying to turn the tables on the starting pitcher. Whereas I'm going to dictate this at bat, and you know, you have to focus on your pitch, but you know you're going to see at some point in the at bat, and quite often early, you know that starting pitcher is going to throw a strike early in the count. You know they want to get ahead. That's everything the Mariners do are based on, you know, getting ahead and being in the good counts. Well, why don't you go get that pitch? And so to me, that is something, you know, kind of tipped off when Scott said, when I saw it on the board, that, well, there's no accounting for this in their big offensive score. Wasn't this a big part of it before? And then just kind of watching what we're seeing right now, and it makes sense, and knowing how much they value hitting the ball hard right now. And, well, when's that going to happen? So, I think that they are focused. You know, we've talked about they want to get off to a better start in the season. They kind of acknowledge that things are a little bit different in April, but I think maybe they want to get off to better starts in a game too. And it's going to be interesting to watch. If this is, because I've been looking for, it seems like the pitchers have had every advantage over the past, what, 3-4 years. You know, maybe this is a way for the offense to kind of turn the tables and be more aggressive at the plate And this is all observations on my part. This isn't so much of their saying they're going to go out there and try and be more aggressive. But, yeah, I have a feeling that's – I think things have changed. I know, you know, they went to the outside. They brought in new coaches this year. New coaches bring new philosophies with them, new processes. And I know that a lot has been given to Brant Brown. You know, an offensive coordinator sounds like a silly title in baseball, but it makes sense. And it's putting all the parts together, and he's responsible for it. The only thing he cares about is the run scoring. But he also comes with an extensive hitting background. And, you know, with the stats that are available right now, and you know that they really have focused in on the exit velocity, you've seen that quite a bit in a lot of the stuff that they've had in the minor leagues the last couple of years. I think we're seeing a shift in what they're trying to do offensively from even last year.
All right, Shannon, let's go through a couple of individuals who I'm curious about, and I'll start with maybe the most positive vibe on this team right now, and that is Jorge Polanco. What is it about him? It feels like he's hitting, he does the little things. What has been your kind of read behind the scenes on him?
Yes. Steady, steady, steady. Everything from how he is in the clubhouse, he is the calm, quiet guy. But when you sit him down and you talk to him, you know, very focused on what he does, has a purpose in what he does, and also has been available to the umpires. I've been told that he is one of the players that has most helped the younger players, which is great. I think there's all some of that confidence comes with he was ready, and I think One of the things that we heard about him when they first acquired him, a word that was associated with him, was workaholic. And I think we've seen that. And I think that a lot of the confidence comes from he was one of the first to look good at the plate. I would say Polanco from the left side has been the most consistent hitter the Mariners have had throughout spring training. And so I think that that helps. But, you know, he's just got a good foundation. I say this all the time. Minnesota Twins, I've always loved the development that they've had in that organization. Mm-hmm. He and Mitch Garver both come from there. And I think that that is something that will benefit the Mariners. They've been raised right in the game.
Spring training numbers don't mean anything. But is there any concern about Luke Raley so far?
Well, he is one of the youngest guys on the team in experience, and I think that he is making some changes, and so when you are making changes, you might not have the success. And one of the kind of the most frustrating things, I think, is unfortunately, and Scott pointed this out, and it's true, they faced a lot of left-handers in spring, and he has had the unluck of the draw, and his starts have fallen on lefty start days for the most part. And that is a side where I think even after, you know, right after they acquired him, I was a little surprised to hear that he would probably be kind of a platoon type in the outfield, at least to start. But I think that is something that was kind of firmly established because it was brought up that he probably wouldn't be facing a lot of left-handed pitching, at least early on. So it's been tough for him to get going. And I think that they'll give him, you know, some runway when he gets going. But I think it's going to help him when the regular season starts and they know who the starting pitcher is going to be, and you know, how you play your offense will be a lot more consistent. I think that's going to help him a lot.
We know essentially everybody who's going to be on this roster outside of a couple of relievers, and we can discuss that here in a moment. But I feel like I got a pretty good sense of who every one of the position players are on this team, except for mm-hmm. one. Who's Sebi Zavala? Tell me more about him and what you've seen, because we didn't even really notice him while we were down there.
A really nice defensive catcher. He has thrown out all sorts of base runners down here. It sounds like he's strong in his game calling. Not a lot of offense, which is fine, but because they're only probably going to play him one day a week. I think you are going to, in the past, you saw Cal Raleigh play. You know, he's the number one catcher, but it was more of a 60-40 split. We got to be careful with Cal. We don't want to wear him out. When Tom Murphy was healthy, that was a good alternative to go to, or maybe Cal would get DH days here or there. Cal Raleigh is going to get the good old-fashioned, you know, every day but Sunday type schedule. If they're playing six games a week, he's going to be starting five of them behind the plate. So Zavala brings experience, you know, and with that, you know, kind of knowledge, he's seen situations that probably Cal hasn't even seen it at this point. So just a good, solid one day a week catcher is what I see with him, specifically good on the defense.
How about these last couple? We're talking to Shannon Dreyer. These last couple of bullpen spots. I was saying earlier that I felt like Cody Bolton may be one of those guys that may be this year's Drew Steckenrider / Paul Sewald, Justin Topa, whichever Mariner miracle story you want to put on him. What have you made of him, and who else do you think is going to make this team that maybe is unknown right now?
They really like Bolton. He's kind of, believe, a four-pitch array. They like the breaking pitches, but the fastball has really ticked up since he's been in camp.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he probably does have the inside track, probably at the first. I think there are two spots right now, and he would be definitely everybody that I've talked to. That's the first name out of the mouth when you talk about the bullpen. After that, it gets a little buzzy. There is an interesting story in Brett DeGus, who was he was not invited to camp. He was a player that was brought up from the minor league season early. He made about five appearances. And for those guys, it's usually you're not even scheduled into the game. Something happens and you come in. He opened eyes so much that they put him on the spring roster. You never see that. It never goes that direction. They get sent down to the minor league camp. He got called up to the major league camp and put on the major league camp roster and really has done nothing to disappoint.
What's his name?
Ever since. Brett DeGus.
DeGus.
And DeGus. DeGus.
Okay.
And if you don't see him at the start of the season, I think there's a good chance you see him early if the need arises in the pen. Options could play a part into what happens. You do have some guys that are out of options that you might have to look at. Taylor Miller has looked quite good. Got a lot of Taylors, Titans.
Yeah.
Miller has looked good, and he brings experience and stuff. I mean, his stuff has looked pretty nasty. We talked early about Carlos Vargas. His stuff still looks good, but I think that if they can find two that will work well, I think they would probably prefer for him to get a little bit of time in the minors, get going, and then bring him up and just really kind of be assured that he is locked in with his location. He's been better. You know, he was a guy who had the great stuff, but, you know, could put up a lot of walks as well. That has looked better, but he also kind of has eliminated the fastball. There are some that would like to see the fastball, others that don't think that he needs it. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, kind of what who wins in that discussion right there. But he is a guy, I think his fastball average, like 98 to 99, could pop 100s. But his breaking pitches were very good in his early outings. He didn't even need the fastball. Now, early outings are different than late outings. That's why I think it would probably be better for him to start in the minors and just really get going. But he looks like somebody to keep an eye out for because the stuff was electric.
How's Matt Brash doing in his recovery?
I think, I just caution it with it, but then kind of a twist was thrown. My thing with something like this is you just don't know until they get up on the mound. And they're not only throwing max effort, but they've also got the adrenaline going. Mm-hmm. So until they get back up on the mound in a game, I don't feel good about it. But Mariners are actually handling bringing him back a little bit differently. They've had radar guns on him in his throwing sessions. These aren't even mound sessions. These are playing catch because they want him first to build the number of throws he makes and then build the intensity of it. And they want him to be at a proper intensity level and feel good about it before they take him to the next step. So it kind of makes sense. When you've got a guy that throws gas like he does, why wouldn't you bring him along a little bit differently? But so far, so good. And they won't put any date on it, but it does appear that he is getting closer. Well, obviously, because he's not going in the other direction. But perhaps I think we'll see him on a mound before we leave spring training.
And what about the other Gregory Santos?
Yeah, he is still not throwing yet. They're waiting for the they're letting the anti-inflammatories take their course. And this was expected. It was expected that he would probably be shut down for a couple of weeks.
I don't like that, though. I'd really like to see him, you know, out there pitching because he seems like he's a lot of fun to watch. He's got some really nasty stuff. Ryan Stanek's going to pitch today, though, and he in some ways sort of fills the same role.
Yeah, you know, the stuff, he's got good stuff. He's not quite that upper tier that the Mariners have, but I think he can make up for that with the experience. That's, you know, just huge. And I think if all works out in the end and if everybody comes back, that's going to be a nasty, nasty bullpen, and Stanek is the bonus. at that point, which is fantastic. But, you know, he has pitched in every situation, and he is one of those guys that seems like there's a little extra when he gets into a game. You haven't met no, he wasn't here when you were here. It's hilarious, and everybody comments on it. But if you watched him in any game against the Mariners, he looks like, you know, the big, scary, mean guy on the hill. Anything but. He is the nicest. You know, just a little bit of goofiness to him, just funny guy. And it just kind of shows you don't know what's on the other side when you're facing it. But he looks good to go. He had been throwing, of course, throughout the time that he was unsigned. And he's a veteran. He's not going to need a lot to get ready. And he's also, you know, they trust him to tell them where he is. So, you know, fingers are crossed. I think he should be ready to go.
How are you enjoying the second Mitch Haniger era so far?
Oh, my gosh. It's good. I mean, I noticed it right off the bat. I thought he was a little bit lighter than we had seen with him. He's always been just ultra focused, and he's still very focused when it comes to his work. But there's just kind of an easiness that I think comes with, you know, knowing who he is, having confidence in what he does, and then perhaps even, you know, seeing the other side a little bit. Yeah, he's thrilled to be here, which is great to see. And one of the neatest things about him is, he was the guy who was always a leader and somebody that everybody looked up to, but it was all by example. And that was, I think, because, you know, what he does takes so much time. His preparation takes so much time. He is actively and vocally leading now, not in that you have to get a team fired up in spring training or anything like that, but in having conversations with guys and, you know, sharing experience with guys. And Scott Servais, you know, he has that morning meeting, and they have a lot of fun things that happen in that morning meeting, but they also will have somebody stand up and take questions from Scott and then questions from teammates if they're up for it. And it's an opportunity to get to know your teammate in the clubhouse and guys, Ryan Sadek is just like, I've never seen this before. This is fantastic. It's not common in other clubhouses, but he grabbed Mitch, you know, 10 minutes before a morning meeting and said, it's your day today. And no advance notice that it's your day. And Scott said that he has done just about 300 of these, and it was the best morning meeting that he has ever had.
Wow.
And he said you could have heard a pin drop when Mitch was talking, you know, about experiences, life experiences, baseball experiences, his drive to win. And then the questions that he got from the group were fantastic. So he's having an impact. It's funny because, you know, the first time I walked into this clubhouse, you know, when they signed him, I'm like, yeah, Mitch, we like him. But, you know, I didn't realize kind of the impact he has in the clubhouse. I walked in and saw him, and it was like, wow, that's Mitch Haniger right there.
Yeah.
You know, Mitch Haniger, if he is healthy, is and we've seen he's hitting this spring. It looks good. I feel he can still have tremendous, tremendous impact. And the key, obviously, is to keep him healthy. But he carries that aura. They called him years ago their champion because that's how he carried himself. That's all still there.
All right, last thing for you, Shannon. When I was down there, when Brock and I were there, we were talking a lot about third base, and they weren't seeing anything yet from Urias. And, you know, we were just a lot of questions. Matt Chapman was still on the market at the time. Here we fast forward. Rojas has been hitting. And Urias has really been hitting, starting to play the field again. Brian Anderson has been one of the best hitters in camp, oddly. How are we feeling about third base today?
I think a lot better. You know, I still don't think it's going to be one of the bigger offensive third base spots in the league, but it looks a lot better than it did at the beginning of the spring when you didn't know if you were going to have Urias. You didn't have any idea what he was because he couldn't get out on the field. And Rojas is one that's a little bit tougher to get to know. You know, he's a little bit quiet behind the scenes, and you don't really know what he is offensively. I know what he was working to get back to, and I still think he's the ideal nine hitter, but he's also got a little bit of pop, which is good to see. Defensively, they're not going to be Suarez. They're not going to be Chapman. And I think that's going to be one of the big questions. You know, you don't get an opportunity to see too much because they're not in games long enough. But we did see Urias make the throw across the diamond, and that looked fine. We also saw him on a slow roller, I think like his third or fourth game back. And he was able to make that play nicely, too. So
I'm just laughing at the idea of, like, you know, we watch these guys, right, like, all season long, but we're judging whether or not he can play third base on, like, one ground ball. It's so funny.
I know, it's so absurd. You don't get to see enough of it, you right. know? And you know that Perry's working with him, which is bound to help, too. But they have options. They have those, and Brian Anderson's going to be an interesting story. He mm-hmm. does have an opt-out, and that's, you know, the situation that he could force. So I have no idea what way that will go. It'd be tough to get him on the roster, but that'll, you know, really tell the tale, I think, of how they feel about that position. Although I will say, we haven't seen Brian Anderson at third as much. They've had him at other positions of late. So
Shannon, I could sit here and talk baseball with you for another hour. That was 25 minutes, and it could and it went like that. So anyway, thank you. I appreciate it. We're getting really excited for next Thursday. It's starting to feel real. When do you come back? You must be getting excited as well.
I come back Monday. I'm skipping the San Diego series. Nice. There's a lot to get ready, and those last games usually don't have much to them.
No.
So yeah, I'd rather get stuff ready for opening day.
Good.
Than spend time in San Diego. You're welcome.
Good.
No, I'm kidding.
Well, Shannon, we appreciate it. Thank you. Getting really excited, and we'll see you when you get back and talk to you probably later this week.
You got it.
All right, there you go. Our Mariners insider, Shannon Dreyer. Make sure you read her stuff every day at seattlesports.com. She does such a good job of keeping us aware and keeping everybody, not just like the details, but really the why behind a lot of what they do. If you read Shannon, you really learn a lot about this game. She's real bright, really understands it, asks great questions. So,
well, and the team, like the story, like the perspective that she has with this many years with
right.
the team, it's just, you cannot substitute that for
anything. I mean, if you want to call Shannon old, that's fine. I would never do that. That feels like a you thing, Justin, but I just, I mean, hey, we all decide to go different paths on things like that, and that just seems to be yours.
We all know how mean Justin can be.
Very mean, yep. And from what we saw, it comes from his parents, right? I mean, after meeting his parents last week, I think I understand it now.
Brutal.
Like, they were kind of mean.
Ruthless.
His mom roasts him, and I think it's hilarious. Yeah, we weren't expecting that.
He's never really said that about her. Like, I didn't realize that his mom was going to come out and just start torching him like that.
Yeah, starts nothing but fastballs. So.
Right, but you didn't say that. I don't know. She works in a salon, right? Or she owns,
yeah, she
a salon.
Owns her own hair salon. Yeah,
yeah, I get it. So, and she's in there talking trash,
well,
all day.
And it's named after Nellie Olson from Little House on the Prairie, the little girl who's the kind of snack talker. So
of
that
course,
makes sense.
Okay. Now it's all coming together.
Yeah.
Now it's all starting to make sense. We got another hour to go. We are definitely going to Pittsburgh at 9:30 to talk to one of the beat writers from the Post Gazette about the very strange quarterback situation they have going on there. What about the one here? That's next on Brock and Salk.